All right, we're back in open session. We are going to go to section 4, number 3. Dr. Nosley is recused, and we're going to get Dr. Wright on the phone. So Dr. Hunsberry, you can go ahead and come forward. So section 4, number 3, case 2380, regarding John Hunsberger, BMD, monthly appearance is required by interim consent agreement. Board may review, discuss, and take action on information.
Hi, Dr.
provided.
Wright. It's Victoria. I've got you on speaker. We're just getting ready to start the agenda item with Dr. Hunsberger.
Thank you.
Including review of compliance with interim consent agreement and adoption of a final consent. And Dr. Thompson, you're the lead.
Good morning. So just checking in, how are things going?
Good.
And your last tests have gone well?
Yes.
And have you figured out yet this random thing? Is it still working for you?
It's still working.
Okay. And have you and your doctor or whomever figured out a pathway should it not?
Not directly, because it's still working.
Okay. It would probably be good to have a plan in place should it stop working. You don't want to be caught off guard and not have a plan, right?
I have talked to my sponsor about randomly calling, like every morning, like I do now. And she says yes or no, because she doesn't know what I'm doing. But that's about the only thought I've come up with.
So I don't know how we get a secondary plan, Victoria, approved for.
She would just have to submit whatever her idea is.
Okay. Because at this point, that's just one of the things that's kind of, that would worry me a little bit, should all of a sudden the lab stop and then you're like, I don't know what to do. And the last thing you want to be is in panic mode to try to figure something out. So I know that we're here to discuss the potential of making a consent agreement, finalizing the consent agreement. I will actually reach out to my fellow board members because I'm not sure what the difference is between.
So the interim versus having a final.
Yes.
So the interim, obviously, we're doing monthly, appearances. So, we could finalize the details and then go to like a quarterly appearance. I don't know if Mark has any other.
Yeah, I think what you want to probably do is take a look at the ICA and see what terms you want to just make permanent and then for what period of time.
Yeah, so I know like throughout this process we have changed some things that were in the initial. And we've done that with just conversations that we've had and also recommendations from your therapist as well on what those are. So when I look at the initial, I know that we've stepped down from twice a month to once a month for the testing. We're doing it twice a month still?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, maybe that was a note to myself to consider doing that. I didn't know if that's something that we could consider as a board. We are in, the initial consent agreement was in April of 2023, so we're just about 2 years in. So if that's a normal process, or do we wait longer to do a step down?
That's pretty normal.
Yeah, okay. So I would recommend stepping down to once a month in frequency. We are doing blood testing for the for alcohol only. I think in the original consent agreement it mentioned blood or random different types of sampling options, and then it really highlighted urine, which I know that we had some difficulties with, and that's why we went with the blood. So sticking with the blood samples and then focusing on the alcohol testing versus the initial consent agreement was drug and alcohol, and then we were just focusing on the alcohol. So I would say once every 30 days, blood testing randomly, so again, figuring out how that is, third-party random alcohol testing once every 30 days. If there is any positive, then we would have to increase the frequency again. Same stipulations as far as if if you're going to have to be out of town, you need to inform the board, that type of thing. Continue with your AA meetings. And then the recommendations, I would say the recommendations that your therapist has put upon on how frequently you need to meet with them. Because I know initially we had a more frequent duration, and then they felt that you had moved forward. And so they are the professionals. We will let them dictate what that is. And Victoria, I don't have that off the top of my head what that is, but I know that we did get communication from them to say what they felt was adequate.
Yeah. Before.
Okay, yeah. So we can add that in there, and then I would be fine. I would recommend a quarterly in-person appearance throughout the rest of the consent agreement.
Okay.
Second.
So motion and second to issue the final
yes
order
consent
agreement. Yeah. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Oh, roll call.
Aye.
Wait, sorry, Dr. A. Dr. James, could you please roll call?
Thank you.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Ray?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. So they'll get that together and send it for review.
Okay.
All right.
We won't see you every month. So we'll see you in a couple of months.
Yeah. Keep up the good work.
Yes. For sure.
Everything's going well, and that's what matters.
Yes.
And I did want to apologize to Victoria. I sent her the email twice. My email wasn't forwarding to my phone, so I didn't get your confirmation that you got the first one.
Gotcha.
It's fixed now.
Good. No other questions for me?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. White. We're going to disconnect the call.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, and then go ahead and go to section 4, number 2, case 2454, regarding hernia. Cool. DVM, monthly appearances required by consent agreement. Board may review, discuss, and take action on information provided, which may include modification of consent agreement. Hello.
Hello.
Okay, so, hello. How are things going?
Fantastic.
Good. And did we get testing? We got that last one, the 10th.
We did.
Okay, I did see that. And then, last time you were here, you're no longer practicing in Arizona. You're not currently practicing in Arizona?
I'm not yet, although I have been in discussions with a telehealth company. It's just a matter of figuring out what kind of personal liability insurance policy and who to get that through and get that all set up. So I suspect that will be set up in the next couple of weeks. With my daughter getting married on Saturday, it's been, everything else has kind of been on hold.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
While I wait for that.
And then any other updates about, I know last time relocation was
I've been working with her Oregon attorney about possible licensure and relocation, and what Oregon is contemplating is essentially another agreement in tandem that mirrors essentially what Arizona's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Recovery Trek is nationwide, so that part's easy. And then she may ask the board to allow her to take advantage of the section that indicates if she resides out of state to appear telephonically. Also, previewing for next month, there is an option for the board to talk about reduction in appearances as well, which we're not taking a position on either way right now, but just as a note that she hits her 12 months as of next board meeting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the relocation to Oregon, though, you wouldn't be planning on practicing in Arizona?
Through telehealth, I'd still be able to practice in Arizona. Because I can reside, depending on the company, because some companies don't want you to reside in that state. Other companies are fine if you live out of state, so long as you still possess that license. In state, you can see just, like, I would just be seeing Arizona and Oregon once the Oregon licensure process is finished.
Okay. So is this like telehealth, this is advice, not practicing? Just because, I mean, there's still VCPR and stuff, so I'm
it would have to follow. It would have to follow the VCPR rules here, which do state that for some things we can set them up telephonically, as long as we all understand that I, at any time, I can say, well, this is something that you need to get your hands on physically, or the client can even say, I think we should do something physically. I have to be able to see the animal, so they have to be video calls, and that animal has to be present. And there are some restrictions on over-the-counter, non-controlled prescriptions, how long I can write those for. I believe, the last time I looked at it, I believe there's just a blanket, no, you can't do controlled substance prescriptions because of telehealth, but I don't have a DEA license and had not planned on getting one until the consent agreement is satisfied, because I don't see how I could get one and still maintain the separation from controlled substances that's required. So most of the things I've looked into with telehealth, if you do end up prescribing non-controlled substances, they either have their own website that those get ordered through, or clients are welcome to go to Chewy, or if it's a human pharmaceutical, then I can call that in. Or kind of, there's options for those depending on what's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Alrighty. Some things to think about. So kind of in the air with Oregon communication then?
It's, we have, I think, her attorney, I've been staying in touch with her attorney. Her attorney is going to be addressing that in April with the board in Oregon. And so we should have more clarification as to her status as to Oregon licensure in April.
Okay. Any other questions from board members? None? Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy the wedding.
Thank you. It should be fun. I'm excited.
Okay, so we'll go back up to section two, number eight and number nine, case 2542 regarding Amanda Fish. Cheyenne, and 2543 regarding Jennifer Klaus. Tracy, could you please read the front line?
Yes. Case 2542, the complainant is Laura Karp, the respondent is Angela Pashian, and case 2543, and the complainant is Laura Clark, and the respondent is Jennifer Klaus. So on September 19th, 2024, Nymeria, an 11-year-old female Jawini Pulomitz, was presented to Veterinary Specialist Center of Tucson for an abdominal ultrasound due to lethargy, vomiting, dark urine, weight loss, and icterus. The dog had been previously diagnosed with lupus and arthritis. The dog was on carbapenem and Librela injections once a month. Ultrasound revealed acute pancreatitis with probable mild early extrahepatic biliary obstruction and scant peritoneal effusion. Splenic neoplasia could not be ruled out. The dog was hospitalized for supportive care for pancreatitis. On September 20th, 2024, Dr. Pashian took over the care of the dog. Based on the dog's condition and diagnostics, further treatment recommendations were made. The pet owners approved an abbreviated estimate, which included an NG-tube placement. On September 21st, 2024, Dr. Klaus took over the care of the dog. Upon evaluation, she had concerns with the dog's condition. An ultrasound revealed pleural and abdominal effusion, and the dog was hypoproteinemic. Dr. Klaus stopped the dog's IV fluids, administered Lasix, and recommended a plasma transfusion. The pet owners agreed. Treatment was provided, and the dog improved. The dog was discharged later as the pet owners wished due to financial constraints. On September 22nd, 2024, the dog presented to Dr. Klaus due to acute collapse. The dog was evaluated. Limited diagnostics and treatments were initially provided. After discussion and recommendations for care, the pet owners elected to humanely euthanize the dog. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. Then it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss these issues with no violations. And the motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. So no complaint, and then Mr. Stoll, are you
monitoring for Dr. Castiano?
Okay, and then Dr. Nosley, you're in.
Okay. In these two cases, this is one of those emergency clinic where there are several doctors involved, shift changes, and that type of thing. The patient was actually attended to by six doctors over this day. The complaint was against two of those doctors. Dr. Pashian had a day shift after the initial hospitalization, about 18 hours after the dog had come in. Then there was a night shift person, doctor, and then Dr. Klaus, another day shift on the next day. In this case, there appears to be communication issues, but it's not clear at all where the problems occur. And so looking at 2542 first, Dr. Pashian, she examined the patient, she reviewed the case, including the blood work, monitored through her shift, all very appropriate. But in the afternoon, she had a in-person discussion with the complainant. And during that, they reviewed two sets of blood work. And a particular note on those blood panels is initially the albumin was 1.5, and then the second set of blood tests, it was 1.4. And that's classified as serious or significant. Hypoalbuminemia, which that's the last time I'm going to try to say that word. I'm just going to say low albumin. The more I say it, the more I'll probably fumble it. That's a hard word. As far as Dr. Pashian went, the albumin level was never discussed in her notes. It was not discussed with the complainant. There was no adjustment in the treatment plan. And the fluid administration that had been initiated for the pancreatitis continued at the same level. And so if we look at that particular chemistry and what it tells us, when your levels fall below 2, certainly reach 1.5, there is serious concern for effusion to occur. And especially in the face of fluid administration with crystalloids like we had here, that's a concern. I've treated numerous cases of protein losing diseases, and this is the problem. That's what you monitor, is that albumin level. And that's where your effusions come from, and that's your main problem with those. Now, this patient was a pancreatitis case, and therefore was getting moderate to aggressive fluid therapy. I'd classify it as moderate, appropriate, certainly. So I think at that point, because of the way this unfolded, I want to take a pause as to Dr. Pashian and move to Dr. Klaus in 2543. Now, she was the last doctor to attend to the patient, both during the initial hospitalization and then when the patient came back decompensating and was very critical with intracranial disease and was euthanized. Dr. Klaus was faced with a situation where the owners had exhausted their available funds and therefore were requesting to take the dog home. And at the same time, she was now faced with a patient whose condition was declining. So she was put in a really bad situation there. And her actions, actually, she immediately reviewed the blood work and noted the hypoalbuminemia. Oh, I said it right.
Yeah.
The low albumin at that point. And that was a major concern for her. After seeing the dog having a little bit of respiratory distress and identifying some effusion, mild in the chest, a little respiratory distress, she thought the patient was declining, so she was very concerned. She immediately stopped the fluid and took measures to address the low albumin. She gave a little diuretic, she administered plasma, and actually that resulted in improvement. The patient even ate at that point. And she did this despite the financial constraints she was faced with. She was actually one of six doctors that recognized the seriousness of the albumin level and took measures to address it. So, in Dr. Klaus, that's 2543, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
So I had that in my notes as well as to what I would do with that case, but I had in 42 concerns about the low protein and not documenting and not having a discussion, not like it was almost like you missed it, right?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Then I was like, are we going to go to an informal on that one and then have questions
right,
on the follow-up, or do we just dismiss the second one? Do you know what I mean?
I have a maybe a different way to go.
Okay.
I'm not opposed to informal, but so going back to Dr. Pashian.
So we have a motion.
Oh,
and a second.
I haven't voted yet.
Yes,
yeah,
sorry. So we have a motion and a second on 2543.
Well, so I kind of.
You want to leave
well,
it?
We still have to vote because we have a motion and a second.
Can we hold on the vote?
Because if we dismiss
it,
then
what
we can't go.
Right,
into
you'd have to withdraw the motion then.
So I'll withdraw the motion for now.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Now.
Now.
Okay. So going back to 2543, again, we have this condition with this albumin level, which was never discussed. 42. Sorry. And we also have, as I just outlined, Dr. Klaus's recognition and treatment immediately. And like I said, that's a concern. And when you have levels this low and you're giving fluids, this can be a real problem. And I didn't see it addressed anywhere other than when it got to the final doctor, Dr. Klaus, and she did. So that's my concern. And so I was looking at this and I said, well, maybe that's just a letter of concern, but then I couldn't come up with any verbiage that worked for a letter of concern for that that would address, and the reason I don't think I could, because I think it was really a violation. So I'm going to make a motion to find a violation of 32212. As it relates to R311-501, failure to follow acceptable procedures and use of current professional scientific knowledge for not adjusting a treatment plan due to significant hypoalbuminemia. That's the motion.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And so I would offer a consent agreement. So I would make a motion to offer the respondent 2542 a consent agreement and accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law. Include those.
Second. Okay.
Well, don't we have to accept those first before we
sell
it? Yeah. Seconding.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, motion first.
Second.
Yeah, I was like,
are you second?
Yes.
Okay.
Motion first.
Second. Okay.
Jennifer, we'll call that one. Since we have, no, okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Oh, so then, yeah, then we can ask if the licensee has any previous board actions.
This would be.
There are no previous disciplinary history.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I would make a motion to offer the respondent 2542 a consent agreement to include a period of probation for 1 year to obtain 4 hours of CE in the area of critical care, submit the plan within 60 days, if not sign within 35 days, move to a formal.
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second. All's in favor?
Aye.
Oh, we have to roll call this time.
Oh, see? Sorry.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes.
So now case 2543, Dr. Nosley?
And in 2542, I would make a motion to...
43.
43, Dr. Claus. I keep getting them backwards. I make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
A motion and a second to dismiss 2543 with no violation. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. So we'll go to section two, number. Oh, wait. Should we go to. Looks like. Okay, thank you. Okay, so section 2, number 10, case 2544 regarding Shanann Edwards, DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front load?
Yes. Case 2544, the complainant is Melissa Murphy. The respondent is Shanann Edwards, DVM. On September 23rd, 2024, Lila, a 5.5-year-old female American Carrier mix, was presented to respondent for evaluation of a skin tag and a lump on the dog's belly. The complainant stated that respondent evaluated the mass by squeezing the mass, causing the dog to yelp in pain and snap at respondent. Respondent was angered, admonished the dog, and retrieved a muzzle to place on the dog to complete the exam. Technical staff placed the dog on her side on the floor while respondent continued to press on the dog's thighs and belly where the masses were located. The dog was uncomfortable, and while squirming to get away, the dog's collar and muzzle came off. Complainant stated that the respondent began to yell at the dog, that the dog bit her, and it was complainant's fault. Complainant contends that the dog did not bite respondent, but did scratch her. The muzzle was again placed on the dog, and the exam continued. The dog resisted and sat up to move away from respondent's exam. Technical staff yelled at the dog, pulling the muzzle tighter to where the dog was drooling and her eyes were bulging. Eventually, the exam was completed and the muzzle was removed. Complainant stated she was upset at what she witnessed and wanted to leave the premises as quickly as possible. Respondent claims the dog lunged at her unprovoked and bit her during the exam due to complainant pulling at the dog. Respondent stated that complainant was yelling, stating the dog did not bite her. The muzzle was replaced and the exam was completed. Surgical removal of the masses was recommended. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. And for this case, Mr. Stoll?
Monitoring. Thank you.
Okay. And no complainant. So, Dr. James, you are the lead on this case.
Well, this one was a real fun one to try and figure out because the two stories are so vastly different that it's not even, it's almost like you're not even looking at the same case between the complainant and the respondent. It was even more concerning that the technician's statement didn't match necessarily even what the doctor's statement was. So like it wasn't even just that this was complainant versus respondent, it was like within the clinic there was some inconsistencies as to what happened. And you know, ultimately when I read some of this, I was like, would a complainant be able to make up something like that if they didn't actually witness it. And there's some of that that I'm like, I don't know that they would. Right? Like, there was the part about the eyes bulging and the redness and the drooling. And I'm like, if you were making it up, I unless you knew veterinary medicine or had worked in it.
I was going to say, I've seen that before. So that's why I was like, oh, like, yeah. I've seen that happen before.
Oh, yeah. No, it that's happens. What they do but, like, for an owner to be able to state that, like, somehow it either happened in this case or this owner has experienced it before and just knew to say that, but that just didn't seem to fit. Like, it seemed like she was describing this in way more detail than what I would have expected if this did not actually occur. And so then it's like, okay, if you say some level of this kind of handling happened, and there's not a lot that says, is that below the standard of care or not, except for the fact that I think most people have moved away from heavy restraint and moved to pharmaceuticals and fear-free methods. So is that a standard of practice issue? Because there's not an actual complaint that says you can't hold down a dog and muzzle it, right? Like there's nothing that says that. So it's either using current procedures or it's not not a violation.
Could I interject? What about the courteous verbal interchange? Could it fall under that? Maybe?
I mean, maybe the yelling at the owner.
Yeah.
But I'm like, God, there was the yelling at the owner and the poor dog.
Like, I honestly, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I want to ask this veterinarian questions. Like, I want to ask questions. But
I mean,
that's just me. I just like, why? Like, well, tell me what happened. Like,
I know. I can't imagine getting to this level of anxiety in a dog. And then it's like after you got bit, you went back.
My question. If you were injured at the beginning of your exam, why would you, even if you had a muzzle, why would you proceed in that one? One, you should take care of yourself. Two, then chemical restraint, right? Like. Yeah.
Like, there were just so many different ways
yes.
of... So, okay, so, I mean, I kind of was going down the path of a letter of concern, but because I couldn't figure out where a statute's going to fit, but if we all are kind of feeling this way, then maybe moving to an informal is better. So
yeah.
I'll make a motion in the case of 2544 to move to an informal.
Second.
Motion and a second to move to informal. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Section 2, number 11, case 2545, regarding Christian Rowley DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front load?
Yes. Case 2545, the complainant is Lana Sears, and the respondent is Christian Rowley DVM. On June 24, 2024, Michael, a 13-year-old male domestic long-haired cat, was presented to respondent for follow-up for upper respiratory issues. Respondent evaluated the cat and recommended performing diagnostics to recheck the cat's renal values. Complainant approved. Blood and urine were collected, and the cat was brought back to complainant. Complainant was upset that the urine was collected without her consent. And the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. And then Mr. Stoll.
Monitoring only, thank you.
And no complainant. Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yeah, so this one is kind of The doctor presented some options for rechecking this cat's renal values, discussed blood work and urinalysis. As per the doctor's notes, the complainant didn't realize that urine was part of the workup. And then when they did take the cat back into the treatment area, they proceeded to collect the urine via cystocentesis, which the owner did not agree to have that procedure done on the cat. So then the question becomes, do we normally tell folks when we're collecting urine that is what we do? And I can't say that that's normally something that we discuss. We say we're going to draw blood, we're going to obtain a urine sample, and so I don't feel that there was actually, this rose to a level of a violation. And in listening to the recordings, the respondent did say at this point, you know, she's kind of like, now she is having those conversations to say, hey, this is something, or letting people know what it is beforehand. So I don't really see a violation here, so I would recommend dismissal with no violation.
Second.
We have a motion and a second, dismiss with no violation. I don't know, I've always been used to, you do talk to them about a cystis and tesis and get permission so they understand, but mostly because there's things that can happen in a cystis and tesis, so that's why.
But I think...
I mean, I've not heard of anybody declining it, but...
The usual way it's done is as you described. I'm not sure I agree with that, and we've had other cases.
We've
had cases where... Yeah, it can be some problems. So maybe we should be, but I agree that most of the time we don't.
Right. And
I think it's good that your clinic does.
It's not even my current experience. It's just the experience I've had professionally. Okay. So that's just why I say that.
Sure.
But
and I mean, to that, do we say, well, when we draw blood, we're going to draw blood from the cephalic vein. We're going to draw blood from the saphenous vein.
Uh-huh.
We're going to draw blood from the jugular vein.
But there's some expectation of drawing blood that you're going to put a needle in a vein. When you say get urine, people don't automatically think needles.
I think it's because in human medicine, you don't typically do a cysto to get urine sample.
For your analysis.
So you do actually stick a needle into a vein to get a blood sample. So I think that's where... This owner was like, what? Why'd you use a needle? Like,
well,
why did you do that?
And you do
get
voided samples on pet patients unless they won't urinate or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't say that 100% of the time we do cystocentesis.
Very rarely would I do that on a cat, though. Like, maybe we in the old days we used the Nosor, but I don't know that.
Oh, yeah, we still collect that way.
With Nosor?
Yeah. Okay, so we have a motion and a second to dismiss with no violation. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Motion passes.
Ms. Bowles, may I suggest that we do Dr. Banesh's item now?
Yes. So we're going to go to section 4, number 6. Case 2408 regarding Dwight Banesh DBM Board May Review discuss and take action on practice monitor report and additional information submitted regarding staff training. Hello.
Good morning.
And then I know practice monitor is also present too. Miss?
Huh? Not the practice monitor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong case. I'm so sorry. I'm moving everything together. Apologize. So just a turn. So Ms. Solomon, you are the lead.
Okay. There seems, after reviewing the practice monitor's report made by Dr. Jock Rawls, that there have been 6 areas that confirm compliance and 4 areas that still need improvement, that did not comply at the time of the monitoring. And I can go into those 4 briefly if the board would like, if not, I'll proceed. There were expired prescriptions, medications. There were 5 bottles of Demerin. Number 2, although they have transitioned to computerized system, 2 out of 3 records had serious deficiencies. So sometimes there's the expectation that because it's program software, it's going to catch this stuff, and it doesn't. So it's still the ultimate responsibility of the responsible veterinarian. 3, controlled substance log discrepancy. Not a huge one, but any discrepancy is a concern if it can't be attributed to waste. And 4 was, there's still pre-anesthetic exam records, 1 out of 2 had deficiencies. So those are the areas that still need improvement. The original consent agreement was in from November of 23, and it was for 1 year of probation. On 4/24, we extended that by 6 months. We are, in order to give which made for 18 months total, that would basically be getting it to April, the end of April, the end of next month. So I think this calls for amending the consent agreement to extend another 6 months to get these last 4 items into compliance, because we cannot say the premise is fully compliant. So those are my comments.
Okay.
Wait, at what point do we consider whether we're going to get into compliance or not? Do you know what I mean? Like, we're extending it to get these 4 items in, but we've been working on these same things over and over. Like, I guess I...
It's frustrating.
Yes. It's frustrating, and yes. If you can't get your medical records in compliance in this amount of time, I don't know what extending is going to do for us. It is going to extend how long we sit here and belabor this, but either you're going to do it or you're not.
Well, and we had a similar case that's also on the agenda where the extension was for 1 year to get everything in line. And I think this is where I may have erred when we did this one, and I suggested a 6-month extension when I should have suggested a 1-year extension at that time. So we wouldn't be dealing with this right now. They'd still be working on it. So I would still, at this point, recommend.
But I think the extension should be based on how hard it would be to get the clinic into compliance. And I guess...
Should be based on the individual case.
Yeah, and...
What you're saying.
I hear you, and I would support where you're going with this. I really find it frustrating that we are still dealing with this, and it's still going on, and I don't have any faith that this is going to get better in the next 6 months.
Well, this is, let's be clear, this is the last extension then. Unless there's some unforeseen circumstance that gets presented to the board, this will be the final extension.
Madam Chair, members of the board, you may want to ask Mark, could this be considered non-compliance after this amount of time? And the board would want to deal with non-compliance.
Would this be considered non-compliance after this amount of time?
It would be, and that's why you're granting the extension. Or considering granting additional time to get into compliance.
What if we did? What would be our options if we did not want to grant an extension?
To open up a complaint for failure to comply with the new order.
So we wouldn't still be getting rid of it?
No.
No, but we'd be getting action.
Just on the fact that they're not compliant.
I don't know. I kind of feel like we should open it, but I'm just like, it's medical records. Fix them. Like,
well, so what do you know that might help us with our?
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning, Ms. Sullivan. Courtney Sullivan, on behalf of Dr. Banesh. We've had very positive reports in the past for Dr. Banesh. This is unfortunately not one of them, but there are steps that the practice has been taking. Regarding the medical records for those 2 dogs, that was the same employee. That is unfortunately an employee that they are having difficulty with. She's been disciplined and she's being monitored much more closely. They have instituted a new EMR to help address the documentation issues in addition to that employee discipline. The expired medications they received from a rep, and it's their experience that these reps, when they give them medications for samples or whatnot, are very close to the expiration date. Just to unload them, if you will. And this one had just expired a few weeks before the inspection. It's not an excuse, but it's what happened. So regarding the Telesol, Dr. Banesh and the practice had done quite a few euthanasias on very small dogs. And based on the number of draws in the vial and the Telesol that was left in the syringe, they do believe that it was waste, just because of the accumulation of those small amounts that they were using and was left in the head of the syringe. They have a new practice manager in place, and they are instituting and nearly complete with staff-wide trainings regarding all of these issues. As far as I know, I think there's two staff that are left to be trained. One is a part-time employee, and the other one is a new hire. But that everyone should be fully trained by the end of April. They are actively working on these issues, and like I said, there were prior inspections that were very good. This is unfortunate.
A lot of these, unfortunately, are also repeats from prior, so they may have improved and reverted back. I didn't go through and track each one. That sometimes happens when new policies and procedures are being implemented, that they'll be implemented and then they'll be in place for about 3 to 6 months, and then they'll revert back to the old system. So that's what they have to watch out for.
In terms of the controlled substance injectables, I think the proper way is you log what you drew, not what you gave to the dog, to avoid just what you said. We drew out 3 cc's, that's what goes in the controlled substance log. Now, if you want to match that to the record, put a note in there, but that's what should go in the log.
You can't inject that back into the
bottle.
You
can't put it back in the bottle.
Or save it for later. Don't save it for later.
Yeah.
But that's even beyond our statutes, right? Federal. So those are things that are concerning, that if we can't figure that out, and those are like big ticket items, then there's going to be smaller things that are going to be concerning. So. And again, doing well and then not doing well is not really progress.
So, Madam Chair, if the board has any more doesn't have any more questions, I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
I move that we amend the consent agreement to extend the probationary period for another 6 months, and that this is the final. The respondent be advised this is the final extension.
For compliance.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so there's a motion to extend. Is this for 6 months? For a second?
No second. So it dies for lack of a second?
Apparently, yes. Okay. Is anybody comfortable with a shorter extension, or do you want to
open a case
for non-compliance? The veterinarians on the board.
And Madam Chair, yes. Members of the board, the two are not mutually exclusive.
Oh, okay, got it.
You could grant a short period because you want them to get in compliance with the order. Again, opening up a complaint, is only based upon the prior actions, the failure to timely comply, but there's still the issue of compliance.
So if we possibly did a 3-month extension, but also opening a case for noncompliance that way, or at least moving in the direction of some progress one way or the other.
Sure.
Anybody want a motion on that? Thoughts?
I'm fine with that.
But just mark the record that this is the one time I am actually more strict than Jay. The one
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part.
She's being more strict than you are.
Oh.
Okay, so do we want to make a formal motion?
I don't think this is the only time.
Do we want to make a formal motion on that?
Yeah, I'll move that we amend the consent agreement to extend probation, the final extension, for 90 days. And it's separate motion?
Yes.
Okay. Second to that?
Second.
All right, a motion and a second to extend the probationary period for 90 days. All right, roll call on this one.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Sullivan?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Okay, and I'd like to make a second motion, Madam Chair, that we open a complaint, a case for noncompliance.
Second.
A motion and a second. Do we need to roll call this one?
No.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Includes this item. Let's see. We have one more time here. We have a timeline. So we'll go to section number 411, case 2453 regarding Hugo Santibanez, CVM. Board may review, discuss, and take action on practice monitor report and respondents' updated procedures. Action may be taken to restore or otherwise modify respondents' privileges to perform surgical and anesthetic procedures. Hello. Ms. Solomon, would you like to speak with the practice monitor first, or?
Yes.
Alrighty.
Yes, yes. Katie?
Come on down.
Thank you.
Sorry, I was trying to put Katie in the last case. I'm sorry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, you have some specific questions, Ms.
Solomon? Although I think having read your report, again, very thorough, my compliments to your thoroughness, and you truly are the eyes and ears of the board on this case, and you've been very diligent, so it's much appreciated. The board previously extended the probation period on this case for another year. The original consent agreement date was January of 24. It was for 1 year probation, and it was extended to January to a 2 year probation, which would end in January of 2026. So it's not that far away. There seemed to be a positive turnaround in compliance and attitudes toward compliance and acceptance of recommendations. Mm-hmm. And you have actually managed to get protocols, and you've reviewed them and approved them as they relate to anesthesia and pain management.
Yes, the protocols that are written are beautiful on paper.
Great, great. Glad to see it. Now the test is to make sure they're implemented.
Yes.
As I said, there is a tendency sometimes to regress and go back to the previous procedures or habits. Did you happen to see the counter proposal regarding the surgery days?
Yes.
That the council, his counsel,
yes,
made?
I did see that.
Yeah, you did see that?
Yes.
Okay. Do you find that acceptable, or you have concerns with it?
No, I think so. It's definitely hard to do a mock. Like, it was very positive of,
yes,
doing what we could to go through like a mock situation, but I don't think it's just like, okay, we did a stuffed animal surgery,
right,
like we can go back. So that is where I was wanting some kind of advice,
right,
on that. So I do agree that I would like to observe for different levels of pain as we go through things, even a dental procedure, because that wasn't getting pain management prior, so that needs to be discussed, which I don't know if the protocols had anything specific to dental, so it was surgery-based, so that I think needs to still go on our agenda for a discussion with them. But yeah, I think the next step would be to do some actual live animal surgeries
and
see if they're implementing those protocols.
And you're fine with three at three different pain levels,
yes,
instead of 1 to 2 whole days of surgery being done.
That's where I don't know. I'm not opposed to it, but I don't think a first day would be a whole day of surgery. So that's where I'm open
okay.
to
right.
seeing what should be done.
Okay. Okay. We'll play it. Well, you can play it by ear.
Yes.
And you can report back to the board on your observations during those three separate surgeries at those three separate pain levels.
Right.
Okay. And roughly, when do you expect that to occur? And
give
yourself time to report back.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have availability this month to be able to do that. And then I can report right after, I feel like. So I don't think that needs a lot of time. I don't know how much time they need to order things, because I had told them to stop
right.
ordering things until we had gotten here, because they had started ordering controlled substances and then ordering things, and it was like, we haven't even got there yet. I know one of the questions I had asked when we were going over the mock procedure was, okay, that they're going to hook up this SpO2 monitor and it's going to go to the recovery kennel. And then I asked, so do you have those? No. And then the response was, well, we can order them. So they were ready to do those things, but not all the equipment was there. So that, I think they need to give me a plan on what needs to be ordered and what they have and don't have, and when they'll be ready for that. Because we couldn't go tomorrow to
gotcha.
Do these surgeries, because
not
everything is there.
Do you think 60 days would be sufficient?
Yes.
Good.
Thanks.
So we can expect a report back, and we'll hear from Flynn, I'm sure, also. But
yes.
a report back from you, Katie, in 60 days on how those surgeries went.
Okay.
And whether you feel that was sufficient.
Okay.
To reach the conclusion that the restriction, practice restriction of no surgery should be completely lifted.
Okay.
Lifted. We're going to lift it for these three surgeries.
Okay.
Because we would have to do that at this
right.
point.
Right.
So we need to modify the consent agreement to temporarily lift the practice restrictions so that the three surgeries at three different pain levels can be performed.
Okay.
And we'll expect to hear back from you in 60 days.
Okay.
Fingers crossed. Because again, here, you kind of heard the board a bit on the previous case. I don't think the board would be open to extending, and I probably shouldn't speak for the whole board, I would not be interested in extending this probation period any further.
Okay.
Do you have any questions of the board?
No.
Does the board have any questions of Katie? Okay. Thank you again. Excellent work.
Hi.
So,
Quinn?
Hello.
And Dr. Santi Banez.
And would it be okay if the practice manager also came up?
Ina?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure, just pull up an extra chair.
Mm-hmm. You get the kid's chair.
Sorry. All right. Okay, so you have any.
I just want to say, based on Katie's report, it looks like we have turned a major corner, and I think that, again, the key is going to be making sure that these new protocols that are well documented are true, that the staff is fully trained, and that they are followed. So I'll end my comments there, and I think your counter proposal, as you heard, Katie, was fine with that on the surgery days.
Yeah, and my thought would be, I think the way, just because we do want to be in a position, because the only issue I have with the 60 days was solely that if he does demonstrate surgical competence and Katie's comfortable with it, we'd like the ability, if possible, to be able to then proceed to start performing surgical, because another 60 days out could be problematic. So what I had proposed was that if she's finding that the standard of care regarding pain management and the surgical sterility